This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here, we enlighten you with the Ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, recited by Ahmad Mirza Devaghifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa ma takunu fi sha'ni wa ma tatlu. وَمَا تَتْلُو مِنْهُ مِنْ قُرْآنٍ وَلَا تَعْمَلُونَ مِنْ عَمَلٍ إِلَّا كُنَّا عَلَيْكُمْ شُهُودًا وَمَا يَعْزُبُ عَنْ رَبِّكَ مِنْ مِثْقَالِ ذَرَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَمَا يَعْزُبُ عَنْ رَبِّكَ مِنْ مِثْقَالِ ذَرَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And you are not engaged in any affair, nor do you recite concerning it any portion of the Qur'an, nor do you do any work, but we are witnesses over you when you enter into it. And there does not lie concealed from your Lord the weight of an atom in the earth, or in the heaven, nor anything less than that, nor greater, but it is in a clear book.
We'll be right back. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Israeli war on Gaza enters its 42nd day with at least 15 Palestinians losing their lives in the latest airstrikes. Moving to occupied West Bank, where three Palestinians are killed in an Israeli drone strike in the city of Jenin. And people fill the streets in Europe and elsewhere in the world, and you show solidarity with Palestinians. Hello, everybody. Welcome to World News. Israel continues to strike the Gaza Strip as the regime's brutal war on the besieged Palestinian territory enters its 42nd day. The regime has launched a fresh attack on the Jabalia refugee camp, leaving 15 Palestinians dead. Casualties have also been reported after an Israeli attack on the Nuseirat refugee camp. Hospitals remain the focal point of Israeli strikes. Al-Shifa Hospital, which was raided by the Israelis on Wednesday, also remains surrounded by regime tanks.
The situation at Al-Shifa Hospital is very dangerous and catastrophic. The Israeli army invaded the Al-Shifa complex last night, and since then, we have lost contact with our colleagues, patients, and everyone inside the Al-Shifa medical complex. We are unable to ascertain the events inside the Al-Shifa complex, including violations against the medics and patients by Israeli forces.
Israel launches genocidal war on Gaza on October 7th. Conflict has taken the lives of at least 11,500 Palestinians, most of them women and children. One of the Gaza hospitals hit hard by Israeli wars, Indonesian hospital in Beit Lahia in the northern part of the enclave. Officials there say the facility is completely out of service due to lack of supplies. They say the hospital cannot offer services despite receiving an overwhelming number of patients. There are currently 500 patients at the Indonesian hospital, while it has a capacity of no more than 140. That, according to the director of the hospital. Health workers also say they're facing a severe shortage of basic supplies, and it comes out as the hospital is also sheltering people from the nearby Jabalia refugee camp. All this taking place because of an Israeli ban on imports of food, water, and medical supplies, as well as medicine into Gaza. Regime imposed its ban in the early days of the war. The dire humanitarian situation in Gaza is rapidly deteriorating amid Israel's brutal war and siege on the Palestinian territory. The World Food Program warned civilians in Gaza face immediate possibility of starvation because food and water have become practically non-existent. The WFP added lack of fuel is also impeding the delivery of food. Said amount of food entering Gaza remains woefully inadequate. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights also raised the alarm about widespread hunger in Gaza.
The total depletion of fuel supplies is imminent, according to UNRWA, and it would be catastrophic across all of Gaza, leading to the complete collapse of water, sewage, and crucial healthcare services, and ending the trickle of humanitarian assistance that has been permitted to date. Massive outbreaks of infectious disease and hunger seem inevitable.
Turk was speaking at a press briefing at the UN office in Geneva. Meanwhile, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees warned of deliberate attempt to paralyze operations in Gaza. The suspension of UNRWA mission in Gaza will pose new challenges to hundreds of thousands of displaced Palestinians who are under the agency's support and protection. Situation remains tense in occupied West Bank as well. Israeli forces have conducted a new attack in Jenin, a flashpoint city repeatedly targeted in the past several weeks. Israel carried out a drone strike in Jenin early Friday, killing at least three Palestinians. Many were injured as well, but Israeli troops prevented emergency services from reaching them. Israeli troops also demanded immediate evacuation from Ibn Sina Hospital in Jenin, that, according to Palestinian media, there are reports of medics being arrested as well. And in nearby areas, Israeli forces have been clashing with Palestinians, regime has deployed a large contingent of military reinforcements to Jenin. Almost 200 Palestinians have been killed throughout the occupied West Bank, either by Israeli forces or settlers, since the Gaza war broke out. Joining us now from Ramallah is Mona Candiel for an update. Hello, Mona. Hope you're safe and doing well. Mona, we know a lot of Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank since October 7th, but Jenin in particular has seen fatalities by the Israeli regime and settlers all throughout the year, haven't they, Mona?
Since the 7th of October, over 200 Palestinians had been killed by the Israeli forces across the occupied West Bank. Maybe the largest number is in Jenin city and its refugee camp. What happened this morning is after midnight, Israeli forces with over 80 military vehicles and military bulldozers raided Jenin city and the outskirts of the refugee camp, raided several neighborhoods there, and clashes erupted between Palestinians and Israeli forces, and we can say it was armed clashes as well in the Jenin area. The Israeli forces caused severe destruction again every time. Every couple of days, the Israeli forces are raiding Jenin, causing destruction in the infrastructure, the areas, destruction in the buildings as well. This time, a drone carried out an aerial attack again at the Hawashin neighborhood, and at least three Palestinians had been killed, two of them according to the residents of the Jenin refugee camp were members of the Jenin brigades, and they had been wanted as Palestinian fighters. This is what they are saying. At least 10 others had been wounded. And as you have mentioned, Israeli forces surrounded Ibn Sina Hospital for several hours, and the clashes continued. It seems that the Israeli forces were trying to break into the hospital of Ibn Sina in order to arrest Palestinians who had been wounded earlier in the Jenin operation. Up till the moment, the operation is still taking place. They pulled out from several areas, but the people there are saying they did not leave completely the Jenin area. There are reports about clashes led to the killing of more Palestinians, at least two more Palestinians, but we cannot confirm this because we didn't receive official statement, whether from Palestinian paramedics or from the Ministry of Health. However, this is what the Israeli military is saying. They are saying that the clashes led to the killing of two more Palestinians in the Jenin area. The Palestinians, the Palestinian fighters there said that they succeeded to detonate explosive devices in a number of Israeli vehicles as well. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces raided the town of Na'lin and had interrogated a number of Palestinians. There are dozens of Palestinians. They detained at least 25 Palestinians, and the Israeli forces are still stationing in the town of Na'lin. It's one of the areas where the Israeli soldiers had been raiding several times in the last few weeks. Again, in Al Khalil, the Israelis stormed the houses of Palestinian, the family members of Palestinians who had carried out the shooting at the tunnels, a checkpoint between Bethlehem and Al-Quds yesterday on Thursday. And again, the Israeli forces raided the area of Al-Khalil, took the measurement of the three houses. And it's clear that the Israelis might be destroying the homes of three Palestinian martyrs, Abdel Qader Qawasmi, Nasrullah Qawasmi, as well as Hassan Qafisha from Al-Khalil, those whom the Al-Qassami Brigade said they were members of the Al-Qassami Brigade, and that the group is responsible for the shooting that took place on the at the tunnels checkpoint, and that the three were planning to carry out an anti-Israeli operation, whether inside Al-Quds all the lands occupied in 1948. This operation led to the killing of at least one soldier, and 8 others had been wounded.
And Mona, when we're talking about this going into Jenin with a large contingent of military reinforcements of the Israeli regime, and mentioning that it involves over 80 armored vehicles, I mean, usually this is not a campaign of this magnitude. It's not to go in there and make detentions. We know that the regime forces have been making mass detentions in the occupied West Bank, including Jenin, since October 7th, nearly 3,000 or more Palestinians detained by regime forces. But when you see a contingent, a military contingent of this magnitude and caliber, should we expect, are we to expect bloodshed coming out of Jenin?
Palestinians in Jenin area for the last 2 weeks, let's say, had been speaking that the Israeli, they were expecting that the Israeli military might carry out a widespread operation and an incursion to Jenin refugee camp. Not only a raid that lasts for 6 or 10 hours or even 2 days, they were preparing themselves that anytime the Israeli military might carry out a raid to Jenin area and the areas surrounding Jenin, because in the since the start of the Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, every couple of days the Israelis had been raiding Jenin area, and if not, they were carrying out aerial attacks against Palestinian fighters and killing. They had killed a number of them. This time, when we spoke about 80 vehicles, this is a great number. It's not a simple operation. But at the end of the day, experts are saying such raids to Jenin area and other areas means that the Israelis want to send a clear message that any time we can enter Palestinian areas and completely raid Palestinian areas, and at the same time, the one of these aims of such a military operation is to cause destruction in the infrastructure, to terrify the people, to make people's life intolerable. Of course, Israeli forces had been raiding Jenin, Tul Karem, Nablus, and Qalqilia, several areas around Ramallah as well, and the Ramallah city, even before the war on the Gaza Strip. But with the start of the war and the aggression on the Gaza Strip, the Israelis are doing their utmost to escalate their measures in the occupied West Bank. And there are rumors of among the people here. They are saying that the metal gates, the earth mounds, the closure, these detentions, they were speaking about an incursion that might happen, as if the Israelis, it's right that the Palestinian territories are occupied. However, the Israeli forces are not inside or in the centers of the cities. However, Palestinians are saying if the operation in the Gaza Strip and the war continued, they might expect anyway the Israeli forces would reoccupy the occupied West Bank.
Thank you, Mona, for that update. Mona Candiel joining us there from occupied Ramallah. Meanwhile, from Madrid to Seoul and Sydney, people have held fresh rallies to express solidarity with Palestinians and demand an end to Israel's war on Gaza. Dozens of people turned out in downtown Seoul, South Korea. They held Palestinian flags, chanting Free Palestine, as you saw there. Demonstrators displayed over 2,000 pairs of shoes and symbolic gesture to denounce Israel's killing of civilians in Gaza. In Australia, people held a vigil in the biggest city, Sydney. They mourned those killed in Gaza and denounced Israel's decades-long occupation of Palestinian land. To Europe, a similar rally was held in the Spanish capital, Madrid, where hundreds of students hit the streets in a show of support for Palestinians. They carried placards reading, "It is not war, it is genocide."
I'm here protesting against the genocide that the Israeli occupation is committing. 75 years of genocide, of ethnic cleansing. They're massacring people that nobody has given help to. And we're seeing how the United States and Europe are supporting the massacre. that nobody is raising any voice, and we have come out to the streets to protest because the people in the whole world are against this genocide.
The German capital was also scenes of pro-Palestinian rally on Thursday. Participants held banners displaying no occupation, no apartheid, and stop the bombing. Now, since beginning of the war on Gaza, numerous rallies have been held throughout the world in condemnation of the bloodshed by Israel. Camila Escalante in Toronto, Canada, has spoken to people there about the Gaza war, and they are very critical of their own government over what they see as inaction to help bring an end to Gazan suffering.
Well, I'm devastated and I'm extremely enraged and horrified by the genocide happening in Gaza. I'm not surprised by the Canadian government's response. I know that they have stakes in trying to continue the illegal occupation of Palestine, and that they are funding this genocidal campaign, and they have been for decades. So I'm not surprised, but it is disgusting to see, of course.
I'm mortified by what we've been witnessing over the past month. This is not a war. This is a slaughter. This is a genocidal offensive against the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip in the first instance, but also in the West Bank, and ethnic cleansing on a massive scale. So I'm also angry with most of the Western governments and certainly the Canadian government for their silence or for their dithering, their obfuscation, their refusal to take a firm, principled stand in favor of international law and in favor of peace and to call for a ceasefire.
I think, as most people, I'm appalled and sickened by what is happening. It's just awful to watch the news, but I keep watching because I am so angry. And our government is taking a very bad position. It's following the United States, as it's done so many times. And that is not helping the people, the children, everybody in Palestine.
Earlier this week, an international delegation of writers, lawyers, journalists, and activists went to Egypt and pushed for the reopening of the Rafah border crossing, which connects the Arab country to the besieged Gaza Strip. The members of the delegation were arrested by Egyptian authorities near the crossing and then later deported. And that's a wrap for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
The whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness. and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely, thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty wise.
In the limelight.
The number of Palestinian children confirmed to have been killed by the Zionist regime in Gaza is now approaching 5,000. As Gaza's hospitals are being attacked and forced to close, and the health ministry is unable to update casualty data, and huge numbers are trapped under the rubble, the real figure for child deaths is far higher, actually. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Gaza's children are living through a horror movie during the day and a nightmare after dark. Gaza's children did not choose this situation. It was imposed on them by the Zionist regime. Gaza's children did not choose death. They have big dreams that they think about every day. They believe that their parents are superheroes who can make those dreams come true. Their parents have told the children that dreams can be realized when they grow up. But the reality, a reality imposed by the Zionist regime, is that so many children in Gaza do not grow up. They are killed before they can grow up. The children of Gaza are experiencing the worst days of their lives. They know that the Israeli regime warplanes are targeting them. It is by no means the first time that children have been targeted. Children comprised a large proportion of Gaza's martyrs during a major Israeli attack in May 2021. But the intensity of the current war is unprecedented. The number of children confirmed to have been killed is now approaching 5,000. as Gaza's hospitals are being attacked and forced to close. And the health ministry is unable to update casualty data, and huge numbers are trapped under the rubble. The real figure for child death in Gaza is far higher. Some of those killed were newborn babies. Is killing childhood in Gaza really the goal of Israel's war? Israel is displaying its inhumanity by robbing children of their right to live in peace. Children fear the sound of missiles and explosions. They are exhausted because they are deprived of sleep and rest. They have to move with their parents from one place to another. They hope to find safety, but there is none. Sarah Al-Saadi is aged 14. She said, "This is not a war. This is the extermination of children. How can the world look at the scenes of children under the rubble as if it is something normal? No one feels for us. I have not heard anyone saying, 'Stop the war for the sake of Gaza.' We live in terror every day. We are afraid of the sounds of missiles and the sounds of tank shells. They never stop." Sarah and her family have taken shelter in a school run by the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA. "They went there to escape death," she said. "We walked for a long distance under bombardment. The Israelis showed no mercy or pity to the children." Sarah has talked to other children at the UNRWA school about her experiences. She said, "We all need to speak and be heard. This is a very scary world. We are children. And like the other children of the world, we have the right to learn, the right to play, and the right to live in peace." Many children have written their names on their hands and feet. They have done so to ensure that if they die, they will not die anonymously. They will not be numbers. Many children cried before writing their names. They felt that death was approaching them. Reem Salama, 10, said, "I saw many videos of children who were torn to pieces. Nobody knew who they were. I saw pictures of children writing their names on their hands. That's why I sat in the schoolyard and wrote my name on my hands and feet. Other children came around and I wrote their names for them. I felt sad, but this is life in Gaza. Instead of learning, playing, watching TV, spending time at home, we are writing our names on our bodies. We are afraid that we will die without anyone knowing about us." Adults are struggling to offer children comfort as the Zionist regime's bombardment continues. Khaled Zakaria, 45, said, "This is a war against children. I cried so hard when I saw children writing their names on their hands and feet. Some of them asked me, 'Does this mean we are going to die?' I told them, 'No. This is just a game.'" Zakaria notes that problems associated with trauma, such as bad wetting at night and trembling during the day, are widespread. She said, "The sounds of missiles frighten them a lot. They experience fear and anxiety all the time. If a missile falls next to us, they cannot sleep at all during the night out of fear that someone will target them. I have 5 children and they are all living through the same terrible experience. I just wish the war would end and I often pray for that. Children are unable to attend classes and routines that give their lives some stability have collapsed." Ahmad Abu Al-Raous said, I used to complain about how I had to wake up early for school. I couldn't wait until the weekend or until we had vacations. Now, I hope that the school will start again. I miss my friends, he said. I miss my grandfather and my grandmother and other relatives. I miss my home. We had to leave it because of the bombing. I am tired of sleeping in classrooms and searching for water for my family. I am tired of the sound of missiles. I am tired of everywhere being crowded. I hope the war stops. I hope that the world hears our voices. According to Al Jazeera English, newborn babies wrapped in blankets and lined up on a bed after being removed from incubators have become the defining image showing the Zionist regime's siege of hospitals in the Gaza Strip. At least 32 hospitals, including 6 premature babies, have died at the Al-Shifa hospital in the last few days. Palestinian Health Ministry spokesperson Ashraf Al-Ghodra said recently as Gaza's largest medical facility was forced to shut down due to lack of fuel and medicine. More than 100 babies are decomposing inside the hospital, waiting to be buried. Tedros Adhanom, the Director General of the World Health Organization, said, "Regrettably, the hospital is not functioning as a hospital anymore. The world cannot stand silent while hospitals, which should be safe havens, are transformed into scenes of death, devastation, and despair."
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Midstream.
Palestinian resistance Hamas is dealing very cautiously with the U.S.-Israeli entity proposals regarding what is referred to as the humanitarian ceasefire. So far, mediators had not reached an agreement accepted by all parties. The situation became clearer with the White House's announcement of a daily four-hour ceasefire, but then Zionist Israel quickly clarified that it does not imply a cessation of military operations. You see, the U.S. proposal for a temporary four-hour ceasefire daily was a response to the desires of the Zionist regime, which does not want a ceasefire that could be seen as an achievement for the resistance or have negative implications on the political situation within Zionist Israel, internationally, as well as on the military level. Whichever way you look at it, Washington aims for one goal, pushing the Palestinian resistance of northern Gaza to leave towards the south, in line with the basic plan to displace all the inhabitants of the Gaza Strip. Washington is basically telling Palestinians to leave or die. The resistance in the Gaza Strip has already made it clear that it will not compel anyone to stay or move from the north to the south. The resistance already views this proposal as additional U.S. support for the Zionist regime, since it does not provide a comprehensive cessation of military operations and prohibits the provision of genuine humanitarian support to the Gaza population. The Zionist regime is now requesting more time to achieve field accomplishments that would present the Israeli occupation army with an image of victory. They emphasize that the idea of displacing the population of the Gaza Strip to the south practically means clearing the way for the occupation army to launch a more intensive destructive operation in the entire north, absolving them of any accountability for the carnage under the pretext of the absence of civilians. The Israeli entity's rejection of the ceasefire is not only related to the military situation, but also to pressure the resistance forces to release a number of Israeli entity settler detainees without any reciprocation. This announced temporary ceasefire does not even align with the essence of the ongoing talks on multiple levels, including discussions in Cairo with the delegation of the Hamas leadership and meetings in Doha between the CIA Director William Burns, Mossad Chief David Bernier, and Qatari Prime Minister Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani. What the Americans haven't explicitly stated is that the one-sided ceasefires and potential agreements come as a result of U.S. pressure, primarily stemming from the failure of the Israeli occupation forces to achieve any significant battlefield accomplishments that could be used in negotiations. This suggests that the Israeli regime may soon be compelled to reassess its objectives to align with the outcome of the battles on the ground, where Zionist Israel is seriously suffering. Welcome to the Mideast Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Tens of thousands of Palestinians fled northern Gaza last week as the World Health Organization warns of worrying trends and the risk of disease after weeks of Israeli occupation airstrikes. The increasing evacuation came as Israeli occupation forces closed in on the center of Gaza City, launching intense bombardment campaigns and claiming that the resistance of Hamas had lost control of the north of the Gaza Strip. To discuss this issue with us from Cairo is Mr. Paul Larudi, founder of the Free Palestine Movement and the Free Gaza Movement. It's always a pleasure having you on board with us, Mr. Paul. Now, the pace of Palestinian civilians fleeing the combat zone in northern Gaza has picked up as Zionist Israel's air and ground campaign there intensified under the patronage, obviously, of the United States of America, who supposedly announced a one-sided ceasefire aimed at practically just emptying north of Gaza from its residents. How likely is it that we will see that the Palestinian exodus happening again in other areas in Gaza, mainly in the center of Gaza and the south of Gaza?
Well, a lot depends. I mean, people do want to preserve their lives. And when the Israeli military is bombing everywhere, they'll try to seek safety where they can. We're not talking about the military here. We're talking about civilians who want to save their families and their children and this sort of thing. And can they be pushed, for example, into the Sinai? I imagine that with enough destruction, Israel would be able to do that if Egypt permits the border to open for that. But that there's no sign that that's going to happen. So they're really caught in a situation where they have to run away from wherever the danger is, but there's no place to go.
I hear that. Mr. Paul, the idea of displacing the Palestinians of Gaza Strip in the south practically means basically just clearing the way for the Zionist occupation army to launch a more intensive destructive campaign in the entire north, preparing for the complete invasion of Gaza. However, the situation on the ground tells another story of extensive Israeli occupation army defeat. So what's the end game here then for the Zionists and the U.S. administration? When is it enough for them to say, that's it, we're done?
I don't know what it means to say, that's it, we're done. because I can't imagine that, let's face it, the resistance forces are extremely well prepared with the type of weapons that they're using and the strategy, and they've made a lot of the Zionist effort useless. Each time the Zionists think that they have bombed the resistance into oblivion, they send their soldiers in, and their soldiers get massacred because the resistance is prepared. So the only thing they can fall back on is to a complete genocide and ethnic cleansing, and that's what they're doing. They have no other strategy than to try to massacre thousands, tens of thousands, perhaps eventually even hundreds of thousands of people. Who knows? But they're not making much headway against the resistance.
Mm-hmm. Well, all of this suggests that maybe the Israeli regime will soon have to be compelled to reassess its objectives in Gaza to align at least with the outcomes of the results of the battlefield. But does that mean that a prisoner swap might be in the horizon? And if so, if that actually happens, if a ceasefire happens and the prisoner swap happens, what guarantees that Palestinians will have that after the swap, the Israeli entity will not just launch another ground invasion and another bombardment campaign against Gaza?
I think the prospect of a swap is a realistic one, because obviously, the government, Netanyahu and his cronies, are failing on the battlefield, and they're highly criticized by the people themselves, the Zionist population, and this is a way of perhaps regaining some credibility that they're not totally ineffective. So that's a possibility. As far as using massive destruction against the population after such a swap, if it ever takes place, I think the possibilities of massive destruction are equally great with or without a swap. They have what they call the Hannibal Directive, where if they think it's in their interest, they will actually bombard the place where the hostages are and their own soldiers if they think that they can gain by doing so. Let's face it, they have no respect for Palestinian life, and how much more respect do they have for the lives of their own people? I don't see it. I think they're willing to sacrifice
people. They already did that. We had a lot of reports coming from the resistance of Hamas saying that a number of the Israeli settler detainees were killed because of the aerial bombardment campaign by the Zionist entity. But Paul, you are now the founder of Free Palestine Movement and the founder of Free Gaza Movement. What are the efforts that you are trying to do in support of the Palestinian people? And what kind of maybe moral support are you bringing on with you from the United States of America towards the Palestinian people?
Well, we feel we have with us very talented people in terms of doing resistance and doing exercise and publicizing. And we have journalists, we have human rights activists and so forth. They're talented, but we're at a loss right now to figure out exactly how much we can get done. There are restrictions, of course, by the government in Egypt. Access to Rafah is very limited. But what we can do and what we are doing is we're demonstrating what the world is saying. We have millions of demonstrators across the world crying out to save the Palestinians and to stop the genocide. And I think that if we can get some of this action on the scene here in Cairo and perhaps elsewhere, then this will help to dramatize the concerns of the people of the world, and this will be reflected hopefully in action by at least some governments
Do you think
that your government will have any sort of an attempt to hear you out, to hear what the American public wants to say about this?
At a certain point, they have to. The demonstrations in the U.S. Are the biggest since the Iraq War, and it's really dramatic. The Palestinians have not always had very much success in the United States, but they are having it now, and this is very interesting. This is quite a turn, and especially the young people. It's young people who are turning out on the streets. So we're at a point where anything can happen. It's a very fluid situation. Mm-hmm. And the more we can get our voice and action in front of the people and the government, the more chance we have of making some sort of progress and headway. So we're trying everything.
Good luck with what you're doing, Paula Rudi, founder of the Free Palestine Movement and the Free Gaza Movement. Thank you for joining us to discuss this very, very pressing issue currently going on in Palestine. Thanks a million. Now, ladies and gents, please stay tuned because next we are going to talk about the Arab Islamic Summit in Riyadh.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
The concluding statement of the Arab Islamic Summit held in Riyadh on Saturday called for lifting the siege on Gaza and ensuring the immediate entry of Arab, Islamic, and international humanitarian convoys, including food, medicine, and fuel into the sector. I'm sorry I'm not too excited about that result, but here are more details in this following report.
A disagreement occurred among the foreign ministers of Arab countries during their meeting on Thursday, November 9, in preparation for the Arab summit that was supposed to take place separately from the Islamic summit on Saturday in Riyadh. Just hours before the scheduled summit, Saudi Arabia announced on Friday evening the merging of the two summits, originally planned to host extraordinary meetings of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and the Arab League on Saturday and Sunday. However, the Arab foreign ministers who convened on Thursday for summit preparation were divided. Some countries, led by Algeria, called for cutting all diplomatic ties with Zionist Israel. The delegates added that a group of Arab countries that had established diplomatic relations with the Israeli entity opposed this move, emphasizing the need to keep channels open with the Israeli regime. Meanwhile, in the concluding statement on Saturday evening, the Emergency Arab Islamic Summit called for a halt to the war in Gaza, rejecting the Israeli entity's justification for its actions against Palestinians as self-defense. The summit condemned Israeli entity aggression on the Gaza Strip and the heinous, savage, and inhumane war crimes committed by the colonial occupation government. The statement also called for lifting the blockade on Gaza, allowing the entry of Arab, Islamic, and international humanitarian aid convoys into the territory and halting the export of weapons and ammunition to the Israeli entity. Among the prominent participants were Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, Jordan's King Abdullah II, Qatari Emir Tamim bin Hamad al-Thani, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi, and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi emphasized that Gaza is witnessing the worst crimes committed in history, which reflects a collapse of ethics and humanity. President Raisi reiterated that the Israeli entity violates international laws in the Gaza Strip and a decisive historical decision regarding what is happening in Palestinian territories is what Palestine needs now. Meanwhile, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad stated that Arabs and Muslims today face unprecedented historical responsibilities because Gaza is not the issue. Rather, all of Palestine is the issue. President Assad declared that any plan undertaken in this Arab summit is meaningless unless the summit has effective tools of pressure against Zionist Israel. Although such important statements were made, however, over approximately 70 years, 62 Arab summits have been convened, with 14 of them labeled as emergency summits, including the latest held to address the Gaza Strip genocide. Contrary to the expectation that an emergency summit would address immediate crises, the term is used here 36 days after the aggression against Gaza began, raising questions about the urgency of the response with a huge gap evident between the rhetoric coming from normalizing Arab and Islamic states and their actions in support of Palestine.
Now to discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Omar Nashabi, political analyst and lawyer, expert in human rights, and supervisor of the Al-Qaws supplement, which is published weekly with the Lebanese daily newspaper Al-Akhbar. Thanks a million, Dr. Nashabi, for being with us this morning. Now, contrary to the expectation that an emergency summit would address immediate crises, Riyadh's emergency Arab and Islamic summit was held 36 days after the aggression, the genocide, the killing, the bombardment of Gaza had already started, raising questions about the urgency of that summit after nearly 15,000 deaths, 5,000 of whom are infants, toddlers, and children. What took them so long?
Well, I can think of five reasons. I'm going to talk about them one after the other briefly, because I can talk about this for like hours, but I'm going to try to be brief. First, obviously they didn't think it was an emergency. After, one of the most densely populated areas in the world, 2.2 million people living in 360 square kilometers being bombed continuously for 36 days, more than 30,000 tons of bombs thrown on these people, and they're Arab, they're Muslim, and the joint emergency Arab-Islamic conference took 36 days to convene. So obviously the first question that they consider this an emergency or not. The second is that some of them who are doing naturalization of relations with Israel, who hope that this will end sooner and that the Gazan resistance would collapse and it would end sooner and they wouldn't have to do a conference in the first place, or they would do a conference in order to regulate and see what the West needs for the new order in Gaza, and this is what the West wants the conference to do. The third is that they have so many disagreements among these states. Most of the states, are completely inactive, On the other hand, there is the Islamic Republic of Iran, there is, Yemen, there is Iraq and Lebanon, and these are taking an advanced stance to defend the resistance, whereas the other Arab countries have a total opposite position. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't express it that, they don't articulate it that loudly at this point because of the bloodbath in Gaza, but they have an opposite position. Fear, perhaps, of some of the Arab and Islamic leaders that maybe if they would convene a conference very fast and they would have a high tone, it would maybe fuel more the popular support for the Palestinian resistance in their own country, and it could threaten their leadership, because most of these countries, unfortunately, they're not exactly democracies. They're more likely, dictatorships ruled by the system of intelligence that controls their population.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Nashabi, the least that could result from a summit like this was at least concrete action, such as severing ties, diplomatic ties with Zionist entity, maybe economic boycotts, for example, and taking a strong stance against international companies that are dealing with the Zionist entity in the midst of this catastrophe and this genocide. What was reflected in the closing statement of this summit? I mean, how is it helpful for the Palestinians?
Well, the closing statement of this summit, this emergency Arab-Islamic summit, is more like a report by a human rights NGO with very general recommendations, with no concrete action, nothing concrete. They wanted to be sure to move away from any disagreements between the nations that are participating in this conference. So therefore, it's fair to say that it's meaningless. What they came out with are general recommendations without any practical follow-up. So nothing on the boycott, nothing on stopping, naturalized relationships with Israel from some Arab nations, or a call for calling the Israeli ambassador or calling the diplomatic mission and showing a strong, stance, or, some actions that are direct. There was no mention of any concrete action, and that makes the statement, the final statement, so insignificant. There was nothing, Egypt has a border with Gaza. There's a border in Rafah. You know, they said, yeah, we should pressure on, you know, for the humanitarian assistance to go in from Rafah. But they didn't give any practical force that could actually, you know, make sure that the border with Rafah is open and yeah. that, you know, and
because
that the
nation,
aid can go.
A nation with 120 million Arabs cannot open a border, for the love of God.
And all the Islamic nations, I think they would support this. This is a humanitarian call. I mean, they could support it. They could send perhaps delegations of observers. I'm not talking about military. Delegations of observers to the Rafah area to make sure that all the aid is going in. Now, all the aid is not going in, or very little, you know, and it's all under, you know, Israeli control.
Yeah,
how can all these Arab and Islamic nations accept
that? We do see the long lines of trucks standing there, and most of the aid is either going bad or is not getting
exactly.
to the Palestinian side
and the Palestinians,
Gaza.
And every day they need it more. You know, you have to remember the winter is coming. There
yeah.
are, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that have no shelter, nothing. And I'm not talking about the hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
People are dying in the hospitals, and, you know, they take these decisions that are so general and impractical and as if nothing happened.
Exactly.
You know, Netanyahu, before the Israeli prime minister, before the summit, said that the Arab nations should rather stay silent. I wish they stayed silent. They did worse than that. They surrendered completely by calling for peace, going back to the peaceful negotiation, not asking for any sort of accountability for these mass crimes committed by the Israelis. Everybody's witnessing these mass crimes. They are violations, basic and violent violations of, mm-hmm. you know, the basic humanitarian laws.
You know, what you're talking about, Dr. Nashavi, was mentioned in the word by Syrian President Bashar Assad,
yes.
one of the most important speeches given on Saturday, when he said that... by the way, his own country is under attack by the Zionist entity and the Americans as we speak as well. But he was asserting that the Arab world has the potential, we have the potential to reshape the narrative in favor of Palestine. But he said that if nothing really viable comes out, then it's meaningless. And this is what you're saying. What is stopping the rest of the Arab world to adopt at least a similar stance or approach like that of Syria?
Well, the Syrian president gave direct recommendations. He said that there should be concrete action to make the actual humanitarian supplies go into Gaza from Rafah. He said that there should be a stop for the naturalization process with the Israelis. And he talked about, you know, taking advantage of what's happening to advance our political agenda. No, they're not going to respond to that because they think that, and let's be very, you know, frank about this. Syria paid a heavy price for its positions. Syria has always had these positions that are, you know, more practical, more, calling for, you know, justice in the area and taking concrete actions. And I think
it
Syria
is still
paid,
paying. I mean, the morning of
price.
Monday, the United States of America had airstrikes on their door.
Yes, exactly. And I think that every position, this position by President Assad and the position of Syria to support the resistance, is a very courageous decision. And Syria has been paying the price, and it will continue to pay the price. And any country that decides to call for justice in a concrete way, not mm-hmm. in a kind of folkloric, just a verbal NGO statement for solidarity with Palestine, that's allowed. But any concrete action to support the Palestinian people and support the resistance and justice will be, you know, faced by very aggressive Western action supported by some of its allies in the Arab and Islamic world.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Omar Nashavi, political analyst and lawyer, expert in human rights, supervisor of the Al-Qaws supplement, which is published weekly with the Lebanese daily newspaper Al-Akhbar. I want to thank you very much for the immense helpful and amazing information that you gave us in support of the Palestinian people and in showing how this so-called emergency Arab-Islamic summit was actually an embarrassment, I'm afraid to say. Well, ladies and gents, thank you. See you again soon next week from the Middle East stream. Assalamu alaikum.
in the limelight.
A group of Palestinians and human rights organizations have filed a lawsuit to force Washington to stop its support of the Zionist regime's assault on Gaza. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, a group of Palestinians living in the U.S. and the occupied Palestinian territories filed a lawsuit recently against the Biden administration, seeking to halt further diplomatic and military support to Israel. The lawsuit accuses the U.S. of failing to prevent an unfolding genocide against the Palestinian people amid